Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about gender reassignment surgery.
Yeah, we want to continue. We began a conversation last week about transgenderism and sort of how Christians should engage that whole conversation in society right now. And we're thinking not particularly with transgendered people, but just the broader conversation about the politics of sexuality and gender. This is a big deal. So we're not talking here about, you know, your friend who may be transgendered or identify that way, but we're talking about sort of how do Christians learn to think biblically in a world that's very confused about issues of sex and gender. One of the things that we want to think well about, and we want to pass along an article that was passed along to us by a listener, it's a Wall Street Journal editorial written by Dr. Paul McHugh, who's the former psychiatrist in chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital, which Johns Hopkins was the first hospital in the United States to perform gender reassignment surgery, meaning changing genitalia, changing the sexual organs to match what a person preferred to be or identify as. Okay, so this is the most radical form of sort of transgenderism. Obviously, there's lots of people who just begin with sort of cross-dressing or identifying as an opposite gender. The sort of final, you know, destination for many is I actually want to sort of be physically reconfigured, not just through hormones but through surgery, so that I actually physically take on characteristics of the opposite sex. And so Dr. McHugh is writing an article in the Wall Street Journal basically revealing what they found over decades of performing these surgeries at Johns Hopkins University. And so this podcast, we're not doing this because we think any listener is probably thinking about gender reassignment surgery, but rather because you need this data in order to meaningfully have thoughtful conversations with people in culture, perhaps neighbors, friends, even transgendered or sexually confused, perhaps friends and neighbors or family members. These issues come up. These issues come up in conversation. People ask me as a pastor questions like, well, hey, if someone thinks they're a woman instead of a man, why should they not be able to have the surgery? If they want that, why should that be barred to them? And so these kinds of questions are important apologetic questions, and we want to give you some equipping to think about them. And sometimes that equipping comes not just from the Bible, but from thoughtful people in culture who are doing research and connecting the dots of what general revelation tells us about the human situation. Here's how Dr. McHugh concludes his article. Sex change is biologically impossible. People who undergo sex reassignment surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Rather, they become feminized men or masculinized women. Claiming that this is civil rights matter and encouraging surgical intervention is in reality to collaborate with and promote a mental disorder. Now remember, Dr. McHugh is a psychiatrist. Mental disorders are his specialty. Counseling and therapy and dealing with people in psychological and psychiatrical issues is what this man does for a living. What he's identifying is that gender dysphoria or gender identity confusion has long been understood to be, first of all, a mental emotional issue. And then as sort of counselors process that with people, those people can arrive at a place where they want to sort of make a biological change. But the beginning of Dr. McHugh's argument points out that that transgenderism at its root is someone saying, hey, I know I have male body parts, but I feel like a woman. I want to identify as a woman. I don't feel like internally what my body says that I am externally. Dr. McHugh says, well, neither does an anorexic person, right? It's the same sort of mental disorder as anorexia, meaning anorexia is I know that actually, I'm not fat, but I feel like I am. What I see myself as is not aligned with reality. And he says that for a long time, psychologists and psychiatrists would treat these conditions by trying to help people understand what reality really is. Hey, you're actually 95 pounds. You're not overweight. You need to reckon with the reality of what your body is telling you. That's how we would normally, in the history of psychology and psychiatry, treat these kind of maladies. And he says, in love and in grace and in kindness, we would respond to a transgender person the same way. Rather than saying, oh, well, if you feel like that, let's change everything about your body and your life to match that, we might begin by asking the question, well, should you feel that way? What does what your body says about reality mean for how you should identify reality? And Dr. McHugh obviously is writing in strong contrast to many voices in the culture who would say, well, if you identify as something, that's true. And we talked much about that in the podcast last week. But here are the interesting things is the statistics that Johns Hopkins University has on these matters over 5 decades now of performing gender reassignment surgery. Okay, so Johns Hopkins began this surgery in the 1960s. They began studying in the 1970s the outcome of those surgeries. What they found is that most of the surgically treated patients initially described themselves as satisfied by the results, but subsequently they weren't any psychologically better off than those who hadn't had the surgery. In other words, the sex reassignment surgery did nothing to make them better mentally and emotionally. In fact, the suicide mortality rate rose almost 20-fold above the comparable non-transgender population. Okay, so the results statistically do not show that sex reassignment surgery or gender reassignment surgery actually does anything, actually brings an outcome that would square with more human flourishing, more healthy self-identity, a more well-adjusted person engaging in society. In fact, it generally made people more lonely and more isolated because now not only did they identify as the opposite sex, their bodies had actually been surgically changed, and that made them even more of sort of an isolated and outcast person. He also quotes a study from 2011 in Sweden, which followed 324 people who had had sex reassignment surgery. And the study revealed that most transgendered people about 10 years after the surgery began to have increasing mental difficulties. So they got worse, not better, as a result of the surgery.
So I'm just going to go out and say this. Typically, one of the charges thrown at conservative Christians is that we are anti-science. To me, this is the more liberal agenda being obviously anti-science. I read this article and thinking, who is anti-science? I mean, the data does not support the agenda whatsoever. So, you know, not to make this a squabble about who follows science more, but this is telling that material reality does not fit the agenda, but yet the agenda must go forward.
Well, and again, I don't want to just keep quoting stats, but here's an important one because I talk to a lot of teachers in the public school and parents with kids in the public school who are like, hey, I have students who identify as transgender. There's a study done at Vanderbilt University and Portman Clinic in London tracking children who reported transgender feelings. 70 to 80% of those children eventually lost those feelings. So what that means is a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, 15-year-old who's starting to feel like they might be transgendered, if you just let that play itself out, 3/4 of them are going to adjust fine and grow out of those feelings. And so if we start telling those kids, hey, no, you should identify as a transgender person, we may be locking them into more anguish, more mental turmoil, and more pain in life than if we just sort of walked with them as mentors and friends and urged them to sort of continue exploring who they are and ultimately resolving those feelings. So I think you're right, Chris. It's interesting that the agenda that's being pushed here is one that actually goes contrary to what the scientific and sociological facts seem to reveal.
It's also interesting that in this article, he gets to the end of it and he basically says the best way to help these kids who have these feelings are to be more devoted parents to them. So you have this clinical psychologist, after all of these decades, after all of these surgeries and following all of this data, simply come down to what we would also say biblically. We would throw in the word biblical, obviously, and say, hey, through some biblical parenting, intentionally disciple your children into their maleness or their femaleness. And he's basically saying the same thing. The best way to help children is to be devoted to them as little boys and as little girls and help them grow up. So it's an interesting, when you come full circle, it's just a really interesting article.
If you're looking for the article, the title is Transgender Surgery Isn't the Solution. I'm sure you can find it. I don't know if the Wall Street Journal has a paywall or not that you have to sort of navigate your way around, but it was originally published in 2014 and then published again just a few weeks ago as sort of a republication in light of this transgender issue coming on the national stage again recently. Dusty, I think what you said presents an opportunity for Christian mission here, because what Dr. McHugh is frustrated about as a practicing psychiatrist is he's saying, hey, the medical and political entities are increasingly telling me I can't tell these kids that they're not transgendered. I'm increasingly being handcuffed to a vision of gender identity that says my only goal with someone who identifies as transgender is to help them more and more move into that camp rather than to ask questions and maybe provoke them to move out of that camp. And so he's writing as a psychiatrist frustrated about that trend. And I think for Christians, this is a great opportunity for Christian mission, because if you think about it, increasingly school guidance counselors' hands are going to be tied, psychologists and psychiatrists' hands are going to be tied, family therapists' hands are going to be tied, but your hands aren't tied as a parent for the kid next door, right? So the kid at your kid's school who identifies as transgender, or the kid down the street who's starting to ask these questions, you have an opportunity as a Christian parent to be an influence in that kid's life and to encourage the kinds of questions that maybe their more official helpers can't encourage. And I know there are people listening to this who are guidance counselors and teachers, and so I want to say, hey, as much as you have freedom to, you also should see yourself as empowered to ask the kinds of questions that get down to the core issues of personhood that might really help some of the kids who identify these transgender sort of identification characteristics perhaps grow out of that over time. Again, we're not who we decide to be. We are what our bodies say we are. And similar to anorexia and bulimia, transgenderism is a vision of myself in my mind that does not accord with what my body is giving. And so there's a need to reconcile that. It takes conversation. It takes prayerful presence. But it is possible to help someone walk that journey. I wrote an article years ago about a friendship I had about it. It's been over a decade ago now, with a transgendered friend who was a man but was identifying as a woman, sort of the process of my getting to know him and building a friendship with him and communicating the gospel with him and so forth. These statistics hold true in Robert's story, meaning he would say he felt very depressive, suicidal. And he would say, of all the people he knew in the transgender community, that was the baseline reality. It's a very depressive existence, because it's very fraught with confusion and with isolation and rejection and misunderstanding. And so it's not surprising that statistically the statistics bear that out. And so I do think as Christians, there's great opportunity here for us to come alongside with winsomeness, with an ability not to be freaked out and not to stress out, but just to be a warm and winsome and loving presence in the lives of people that we encounter who might struggle with these sorts of questions.
There's an incredible opportunity here to speak to both the power of sin and the power of the gospel, the sense that this is how deep and pervasive sin gets to the very core of our being and our bodies, and it will create conflict between who we are physically and what we're experiencing internally, and the extensive need for wholeness that only Christ can bring. So, I mean, as much as there is a cultural battle, so to speak, going on, and as we talked about last week, the implications of this, there's an incredible opportunity to speak to the power of the gospel here. So I agree with you, Bob, in the sense that how are we articulating a whole gospel, and how there's a deep work that the Spirit will do, and even getting down to issues of identity. Like, what does it mean to follow Christ and find our identity in Christ, and how does that begin to reorient? Not that it's a magic bullet and you accept Christ and all your problems go away, but in the sense that as He is making us new internally, that begins to reorient those things. And so just to encourage those who maybe do have transgendered friends or are engaging this in a personal situation, to speak highly of Christ and the power of the gospel and His ability to heal and to save.
In addition to that, I would just say, have some courage. Mm-hmm. I think that where, there's such a sort of muting of anyone that sort of would disagree with the transgender identity politics, that Christians, I think, can sometimes feel hesitant to say, like, can I speak up? Can I say, you can't go from a woman to a man? Can I say that you are who you are and that matters? Yeah, you can say that. Now, you need to say it winsomely. Don't say it shrilly. Don't say it obnoxiously. But man, Christians need courage. And that's why I started this podcast with that last paragraph from Dr. McHugh's article, where he says, people who undergo this surgery do not change from men to women or vice versa. Rather, they become feminized men or masculinized women. That's a very courageous way of stating the truth. And Christians need increasingly that kind of courage to say, look, you're a man or you're a woman. There's nothing that your feelings can do about that. There's nothing that your identity can do about that. There's nothing the clothes you wear can do about that. The thing you need to do about that is wrestle with, what are the questions of identity at the core of your being that need to get resolved?
And this is the fundamental issue for facing Christians right now. And so the only way to avoid the conversation is to basically, go hide or something. But this is definitely the thing at hand. So we can't just ignore it and hope that, oh, well, that makes me uncomfortable, so I'm not going to enter into that conversation, when this actually is the conversation that our culture is having and that everyone around us is having, which means our neighbors are having that conversation and they're going to school with our children. So we have to have these conversations with courage.
For most listeners, I mean, there's a handful of listeners who will have a transgendered friend, but for most of you, the reason we want to pass this along to you is because you're not so much going to have a transgendered person in your life as much as you're going to hear these arguments replicated by people around you. So you'll hear non-Christian friends, non-Christian coworkers increasingly saying, well, I mean, gender is fluid. It's not binary. These are sort of the lines that get parroted in the culture and that people begin to believe as true. And so if one of the functions of the gospel is to replace lies with truth, then one of the functions of Christian wisdom is to be able to identify and discern lies and confront them with truth in appropriate and winsome ways. And so that's part of the reason for talking about these subjects, is to equip you for those kinds of conversations. Thanks, Jeff, podcast listener Jeff, for the article. It was a great article, and hey, it made for a good podcast topic. So thanks for sending it our way. That's what good podcast listeners do, you guys. They give us good things to talk about. So anyone else out there want to send us stuff, we'll always chop it up here on the Wednesday Convo.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join us next week for another Wednesday conversation.